Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 101st edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Chiara Morricone. She was born and raised in Rome, Italy, where she attended the American school until she was 16. She attended college in Florida, taught English in Japan after college, completed her graduate education in London, England, before moving back to Rome, where she met her husband. She and her husband and children moved to Maine in 2015. Thank you so much for joining me today, Chiara.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So can we start by talking a little bit about what it's like living in Rome versus visiting in Rome?
Well, they're very two different concepts. So living in Rome means seeing the real part of Italy. So, which means a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of waiting in lines, a lot of dirt, and also obviously beautiful things. But if you're just visiting Italy, you know, first of all, you're going as a tourist or as an adventurer. So even the bad things look beautiful. And also, you know, you're on vacation. So everything kind of slows down and you just are able to take everything in. You know, when I was going to school, I would take the bus and the bus would go right beside the Colosseum. And I would look at it, obviously, because it's there and it's huge, but it was there.
So every day.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I will go back to Italy in July, and I think that I'm actually going to go visit the Colosseum.
Yes.
Not that I haven't, but
I'm a tourist in your own town.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Rome's huge.
Humongous. Yes. So the public transport system is vast but slow. So better off taking a taxi. But yeah, it's huge. It's larger than New York City in a whole. So yeah, it's a big city. It's very multicultural. Obviously a lot of Italians, but in the last 15 to 20 years, there are large Chinese communities, large Indian communities, and North Africans.
Yes.
Many.
Coming over. And then maybe Syrians now.
Yes.
Yeah. So what did your parents do for work when you were growing up?
So my father started working when he was 20 or 21, and he started working for an airline company, the only Italian airline company called Alitalia. And that's where he stayed forever.
Until
he retired.
To stay in the same job?
It is very common because of the unemployment rate. It's very difficult to change jobs. It's very difficult to find a job that would be at the same level as the job that you had previously. So a lot of people just tend to find one and stick to that one. Having a job is better than having no job at all. So, so they tend to just stay with that one job that has the benefits and has the paid vacations and everything. And they stick to that until the very end. Mm-hmm. My mother, instead, she moved to Italy from Philadelphia when she was 23 or 24 to become an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And so she worked for the American Embassy, and she translated movie scripts and books, but she was basically a stay-at-home mom as well. So her job, you know, she was able to just stay with me, but also work from home. So
that's pretty ideal.
Yes, very.
That's nice. So as a child, as you were growing up in Rome, what did you think you would be when you grew up? What did you hope to become as an employee, a worker?
Well, at first, I wanted to become an archaeologist. I was very fortunate because my father worked for an airline, so our tickets were free.
Oh, nice.
So we could travel a lot. So we've been to Egypt 7 times, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to discover more things that were there. And then I had a brief, very brief inclination on becoming a police officer. I think it's because I just wanted to, like, beat the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Beat in the sense, not physically.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that clarification.
Yes. and then I wanted to become a marine biologist. And that's why I went to Florida. I wanted to become a marine biologist and study marine biology. That didn't quite work out. And so then I said, oh, you know what? I think I'm just going to escape to Japan. So that's what I did. I just took a 2-year hiatus and just started teaching English because I knew English. So, and then I went back and I said, well, maybe I'll get a master's in journalism. Maybe that's what I'll do. So that's what I did.
Yeah. Journalism.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. I worked for the Vatican for like 5 years. Interesting. It was actually for the U.S. Bishops Conference. So it was actually an American news agency. So I was being paid in dollars in Italy, which didn't quite work out at the end because of the exchange rate.
Oh.
And so then I decided that maybe I didn't want to work for anybody else. And so I started my own school, my own language school.
Nice. Yeah. How many clients would you have at a time?
Well, we started with 20. And who were paying like $5 a month. And then I left Italy and I left my company and there were about 220.
Wow.
And so all by word of mouth.
Nice. So did you have whole classrooms of students studying?
We worked in public schools. So we offered English classes after school at a very affordable price so that everybody could join. And if they couldn't afford it, we would make sure that they would be able to attend anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was our teachers going to students' houses. So it was kind of freeing in that sense for teachers. You know, they could pick and choose where they wanted to go in the city and where to teach. So, but the main focus was in public schools.
So you really grew that business quite a lot.
Yes. And, you know, it was just kind of like, we weren't even looking to make it into a big thing. It was just kind of like, well, let's just make some extra cash on the side. But then people just started calling us and emailing us and like just asking for more. And it was, I didn't get it at that time until I started teaching in the public schools. And English isn't really taught. It's taught, but it's taught in Italian. So it's not practiced. And so the teachers are Italian. So the students are learning English with an Italian accent. So they're all talking like this, you know? So.
Well, that's pretty great. So did you have business people who were trying to learn English for their work, or was it mostly kids?
No, we had a variety. We had from 2 years old to 60 years old, from corporate people to stay-at-home moms who just wanted to get something else under their skin. We worked for businesses. We, quite a few actually, and we also had Skype lessons. So we had like a, what would you call it? Like a hotline?
Yes.
So that people would call, or they would email us or text us and say, you know, I have a conference call in like a half hour. Can I have like a 10-minute warm-up session in English? So we would do it over Skype.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. That was my idea.
You could still run that from here.
Oh, that's very interesting. Thank you. I'll look into that.
So you come from what you characterize as the smallest Italian family. And I wonder how your parents felt about you leaving all this business in your life and moving to the United States.
Well, you know, they weren't very happy with me coming back to Italy in the first place. So they were very happy for me to go to university here and then go to Japan and then go to London. And then when I went back to Italy, they were like, why? Why are you doing this? Like, you're building and you're going up. And by coming back to Italy, you're going back down. And I I really didn't get that, but now I do. I get that Italy is stalling. It's at a standstill. And it's been like that for quite some time now. And a lot of people don't understand that, or they don't accept it. And it takes a lot of courage to, you know, just be able to say, okay, there's no way out of here. So no one's going to do it for me. I'm going to do it myself.
It does take a lot of courage, whether you're coming with excellent English skills or you've never been to the United States before you get off the plane. It takes a lot of courage to reinvent your life.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, I wasn't so, I mean, I can't describe myself as being courageous, as, you know, I'm an American and I speak English. But my husband, you know, he speaks okay English, but, you know, he's Italian. He's never lived in the United States. My kids have never lived in the United States. So they're really the brave ones here. I just kind of like made it a little bit easier, hopefully.
Yes. Well, by saying you're an American, that meant your mom was an American and your dad was Italian, right?
Yeah, that's
And so
true.
You're Italian-American.
Yes, I do have dual citizenship.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't have to get a green card. I don't have to do anything. I just have an American passport.
Yes.
And an Italian one.
And your parents can know if you're here, they can come visit you anytime they want because your dad works for the airlines.
In fact, just yesterday they arrived and they're actually in Florida and they're going to be there for 2 weeks and then they're coming here for a week.
Lovely. Maybe we'll have spring by then.
Hopefully. Do we even have spring here?
Slowly.
We'll see.
Yeah. You're listening to WMPG. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and today my guest is Chiara Morricone. Chiara chose today to come on the air so she could talk about International Workers' Rights Day, which is celebrated in more than 90 countries throughout the whole world today. So, Chiara, can you tell us about what the 1st of May was like in Rome when you were growing up there?
Well, when I was younger, the 1st of May didn't really symbolize anything except for like this huge free concert that's held every year on this day in Rome. So that was really the main focus for me when I was younger. And also because I lived right in front of this huge square where the concert was held. So I was allowed to go by myself or with my friends.
Wow, cool.
And then, you know, slowly when I got into the world of workers, that's when I started understanding why it was so important. Sorry. And especially working for Italian companies, you know, you work, they expect you to work, but they don't expect to pay you.
That's an interesting setup.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was because I was young or inexperienced, but the first few companies that I worked for in Italy, I actually had to remind them to pay me. And in one place, they actually said, oh, we pay you? I was like, yeah. Oh, well, why do you need this money?
Really?
Mm-hmm. And he said, don't you live with your parents? I said, yeah, I do, but I don't want to. So I understood right then and there that it's like, wow. You know, people expect a lot. Companies in Italy expect a lot, but they don't give anything back.
Including pay.
Including
that seems like a big thing to forget to do.
Well, a crucial part of it, yes.
And now, when you go to Italy and when you think about International Workers Day, I wonder what International Workers Day means to people there, citizens in Italy.
Well, at first, this day was considered a day of celebration, whereas now it is considered a day of protest. So it's very interesting to see the transformation of this day, of the meaning of this day. Whereas before, you know, especially in the 80s, you know, Italy was flourishing. Everybody had a job, everybody had a stable job, and everybody was happy. And now, you know, we have students who are they're graduating, and they have nothing. They have no opportunity whatsoever. So, you know, it's just another day of protest. They're demanding more workers' rights. Whereas before, they were just celebrating the rights that they had, but now they're protesting of the rights that they lost.
Yes. So right now in Italy, it seems that the unemployment rate is around 11.7%, but among young people, it's 44.2%. Mm-hmm. I think that's 30 and under. That's an astonishingly high number, and how demoralizing to become trained, to be ready, to have great ideas and have nowhere to put them. Mm-hmm. So people are getting restless, it sounds like.
Restless, and something's changing. I've been reading a lot of articles lately, Italian articles, obviously, about parents pushing their sons and daughters away, which is totally not Italian. So now they're like, they're realizing that there really is no future in Italy. So they're really pushing their children to abroad. Mm. So they're really pushing them to find new opportunities anywhere else but in Italy.
Wow.
It's very interesting. It's just, you know, if you think about Italian families, you know, they're always together and they're always having lunch together. And it's just very family oriented. But even, you know, my parents' generation are now realizing that there just is nothing for them. There's nothing left.
And does that create kind of a national depression? You know, that's breaking with tradition and values and everything else just to move towards survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Italy has become a very sad place, especially for my parents' generation, because everything that they built is crumbling down. They've left nothing for us, and it's not their fault. And then there's definitely nothing left for the younger generation. So there's no passion. There's no energy to bring something forward, something new. And I might have mentioned this before when we spoke before, but, you know, like, we have a prime minister and he wasn't even voted for. Nobody voted for him. He just kind of showed up. So that also brings into the whole, like, well, you know, we got nothing left, so let's have someone else do it for us, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing, that apathy. Amazing amount of apathy to not bother to elect your official. Someone just shows up, mm-hmm. starts ruling. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I believe in cycles. So this is a cycle where everyone's kind of sleepy and dormant and just kind of, you know, a little lazy as well, because they've been so used to the good life. So now they're kind of like in a very in a resting place. But I think something's going to happen. Something's going to give.
Yeah.
It has to.
And on this day, people all over the world are recognizing that and either celebrating their workers, the wonderful things in their lives, or asking for more fairness and equality in their work status. Are you aware at all of what goes on today all over the world?
I don't.
Yeah. I just, you know, I was just looking into this because I feel really ignorant. I didn't realize this was a holiday very much. But it's huge. Over 90 countries. Are you kidding me? How did I miss that? I imagine people think that's funny when they come here and we don't celebrate this holiday. Mm-hmm. The irony, of course, is that it started here. I was just listening to a historian named Peter Linebaugh, and he wrote a book recently called The Incomplete, True, Authentic, and Wonderful History of May Day. He was on Amy Goodman's show, and he was saying that it started with the Haymarket riots in Chicago and people demanding 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, 8 hours of what you will. Mm-hmm. And that was a movement that started here and then got sent abroad. And then our government kind of moved to smooth over it and pick a different Labor Day and make it about a different thing.
Yeah. And that's so weird that, you know, that whole movement started here. And yet to this day, it's not respected. So workers in general, I feel, in my opinion here, they're just kind of like mules, not in the sense of stupidity, but in the sense of, you know, work, 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 produce, produce, produce. Don't stop. Give us more. But so it's ironic that it all started here, and yet it's kind of been pushed to the side.
I think it's really important to have people from other cultures come in and look and say what they see, because sometimes we forget. You know, it's like the water gets turned up and gets hotter and hotter without you realizing. And sometimes it takes someone outside to look in and say, gosh, it's awfully hot in here. And, you know, we have begun to work more and more around the edges, our email at all times kind of thing. In Europe, they've started to limit their professional emails, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. I am guilty of that. I have been checking my emails early in the morning as soon as I wake up. And I didn't used to do that. And now I feel like there's this sense of urgency, but there really isn't. There really isn't. Like, that email can wait till I get to the office.
Yeah.
But somehow everything, there's this frenetic energy around you. And if you're working in an office or you're working in a supermarket or you're working anywhere, there's just this energy that you just have to go, go, go. And it's kind of like, where are you going?
A big rush to nowhere.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting.
I know. It's so true. We'd be smart to develop that other 8 hours, right? The stuff with the connection with people, exploring our own interests.
And without smartphones.
Yeah. Put them down, huh?
Yeah.
What a brave idea. So, can you tell us about this big concert that's going on in Rome today and how people might tune into that?
Oh, well, it's a huge concert that's been going on for about, I think, 25 years now, and it's completely free. And we've had people like Maroon 5 and Skunk Anansie, who's playing today. We've had U2. We've had a lot of international artists, but also, obviously, Italian artists. And it's a day-long concert. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people show up. There are trains dedicated just for people going to the concert from like the south of Italy, from the north of Italy. There's buses. I mean, it's a big deal. And it starts, people, you know, they get there the night before, put up their tents. And it's just a day of celebration and protest at the same time. A lot of young people, obviously, but also a lot of nostalgics.
Yeah.
I would be there today.
Yeah. Do you miss it?
Kinda. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. So will protesters then join in with the concert? Is that a separate event totally?
This is a totally peaceful event. So there might be posters. There might be flags. There's usually a couple of communist flags, socialist flags. There's a lot of people that talk, a lot of the guests. There are union leaders, presidents. A lot of the singers themselves protest against the government. And it's totally fine. You know, freedom of speech over there as well. So, yes, I would say that it's a very good mix of celebration and protest. I would say 65% protest and the rest is celebration.
Yeah. So I understand that some of the organized labor ideas came to the United States with and to the state of Maine with Italian immigrants. I had seen at the new, 400 years of New Mainers, the exhibit at the Maine Historical Society, a piece about how the Italians came as stonecutters, and they taught their craft and built beautiful things in the state of Maine, but also brought their ideas about unionized labor.
Mm-hmm. The thing about Italy is that, okay, so there's not a lot of respect for workers, but there is no problem in having workers get together and go on strike or protest together or go on the streets and protest. That is totally fine and totally acceptable. And not that maybe no one's listening, but you can definitely do it. Especially the strike thing, especially in public transportation. That happens a lot. Maybe once a month in Rome. So, and it usually rains on that day too. So that really, it's a good combination.
So here, what kinds of differences do you find between working and running your own language school and business in Italy? And what would it be like here starting up a business versus when you were running a business in Italy? Do you have a sense for that?
Not yet. I do feel that it might be a little easier here, a little more quicker. In Italy, it's there's a lot of paperwork to fill out. And, you know, the business that I had in Italy, we our courses, our English courses were very affordable. And even though Italians are in a very bad place right now, economically speaking, if they're not paying a lot of money for something, they don't think it's worth it. So we had a lot of trouble with that. And here, you know, I think I'm going off on a tangent right now, but, you know, there it's kind of like you have to make bella figura. And bella figura means you have to look good at all times, no matter what. And here instead, it's very easygoing. You can say, oh, yeah, I bought these shoes, you know, and they were on sale for like at 70% off or something. So, what I'm trying to say is that it's just very easy to do it here rather than Italy, just because it doesn't matter what your...
You had said when we had talked before that here you need just a name for your business and an idea. And there you have to spend money to get your business up and running.
That's right. That's right. So that's when the whole concept of the land of the opportunity in America starts. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to do something and you have the energy to do it and the ideas and the right business plan and you get to do it. Whereas in Italy, you may have the best idea, but if you don't know the right person that can help you, so to speak, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, a little old school in
that
way.
A little old school, yeah.
So presently you're a sales manager for a company with multiple hotels in the area. And I wonder what your hopes and dreams are for the kind of work you might like to be doing here in 10 years or so. Do you have a work dream?
Well, seeing that I change my mind so often, and if my boss is listening, I would like to become director of one of the hotels, maybe. That would be nice in the next 5 years.
Okay.
10 years, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You bring a lot of different skills to the table.
Hopefully.
Kia, you are so lovely and open, and thank you for coming in to share your story opening our eyes to what's going on all around the world today. And thank you for being my guest on this International Workers' Day.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Would you be so kind as to introduce the song you've chosen to close today's program with?
Sure. So the song that I chose is called Bella Ciao. And it is a folk song that the partisans would sing when they would leave to fight the fascists, which they then were successful with it. And they liberated Italy from fascism. And this song is sung at parties, at festivals. It's my father used to sing it to me to go to sleep. So it's a song that's in my heart.
Thank you. Bella ciao.
Mi sono alzato, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Stamattina mi sono alzato e ho trovato l'invaso. Oh partigiano, portami via, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Partigiano, portami via, che mi sento di morire. E se io muoio da partigiano, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. E se muoio da partigiano, tu mi devi seppellire. E seppellire lassù in montagna, o
Oh, bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Seppellire lassù in montagna, sotto l'ombra di un bel fior. Tutte le genti che passeranno, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. E le genti che passeranno ti diranno che bel fior. E questo è il fiore del partigiano. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Questo è il fiore del partigiano, morto per la libertà. Questo è il fiore del partigiano, morto per la libertà.